Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded the 15th day of August, 2014.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Earlier this week, the United States Department of Agriculture released the August crop production and WASDE figures. We'll talk about those and the FSA figures that were released this morning. Those are the preliminary certification on acres. Our panelists today in studio include Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana, and on the phone lines, Dale Durkles of AgriVisor out of Bloomington, Illinois, and Chip Nellinger from Blue Reef Agri Marketing. He's out of Morton, Illinois. Let's begin our conversation in this way. As we did last week, Dale Durkles, I'd like to make a list of the things that you all would like to talk about. So what's on your list of the most important items from the trade this week?
Well, I think we could probably talk about the acreage numbers that came out Friday. We could talk about the corn yield that USDA released on Tuesday. And I think we also need to talk about China dryness.
All right. And how about you, Wayne Nelson?
Well, Todd, I think one of the things we'll look at is when are these new crop beans going to hit the market? They're out in the field. Are we going to see them sooner or later? I'd like to say, are the commercials going to use the basis, or are they going to drive up the board a little bit to try to get the flat price up to get the farmers to move them? And how about Pro Farmer next week?
And how about from you, Chip Nellinger?
Well, I think we need to talk a little bit about this Russia-Ukraine situation and how that continues to affect the wheat market. Also kind of adding on to the August crop report this past week, what to expect going into the September report. Are these yields going to continue to grow, or are we close to the biggest crop that we're going to trade here on corn and beans both?
Well, let's start there. I'd like to get the crop report out of the way early. What do you think? Will it grow in September or not?
Well, I think the historical tendency is that for sure the corn market will see higher yields in September. It's just a matter of how much bigger. And bean yields are still very much a wild card. I think that September report is going to be key for bean yields. But history tells you, and obviously the weather that we've seen here recently in the month of October, August, would have you believing that corn yields can grow in both the September and the October crop reports coming up.
Dale, would you agree with that? And how do you work the FSA figures into it?
You know, I think what Chip said is really appropriate. Historically, you know, we can talk about the corn yield going up. Fortunately for corn, we at least do get some base data from USDA NAS that tells us a little bit about ear weight and a little bit about population count, and that does help. And it tends to say when you look at those, yields could go up a little bit at this point. Like Chip said, beans are a pure wild card at this juncture. We don't have any idea what the USDA used to base their numbers on now, other than maybe farmer survey, but the field data is still so incomplete. So it's a little bit better once we get into September, and we'll see where we're at then. The FSA numbers, you can imagine there was a lot of wild rumors about what kind of declines we might see ahead at this point. I think, the data is too preliminary yet to make any harsh statement or any accurate statement about, other than the fact that it tends to suggest bean and corn acreage numbers could be revised down a little.
And would you agree with that, Wayne, on those numbers?
Well, it looks like that, Todd, but I said the one thing going on here is there's a lot of people that just haven't been in their FSA offices yet. We're hearing that their offices were cut down from 6 personnel to 2 personnel in a lot of cases, and the soonest a lot of guys could even get in was this last week to do their certifications. So I think there's a lot of numbers hanging out there. The one thing I did notice on that report, though, was when they talked about prevent planted acres, they were a lot less than last year and less than a lot of people were expecting. So why are we so short on the other acres?
And do you have a reason why?
I'm not sure. I just think we were still planting all of ground we could plant this year. It wasn't the low prices when we started out. So that's why I'm wondering that we won't see some growing with some late certification.
And I'm wondering, when we take a look at this, and I've asked this a couple of times out in the field this week, on Monday, and I asked earlier in the show for the closing market report, what was the trade looking forward to in terms of the ending stocks in the fall of 2015 for corn? So were they at USDA's 1.8? Were they at 1.9? Were they at 2? Were they at 2.1? What do you think, Wayne?
I think they were looking at that 2 number pretty hard and just whether it went up above that for their, you know, smash hit down if you hit that or above. And when they didn't get there, well, I think that's why we didn't see, you know, take things taken off extremely hard like they were.
And Dale?
You know, the 2 billion bushel number really was the popular wisdom that everybody had there. And I think, you know, the USDA really took it away in part because of the production number for the new crop, but also because they raised the demand numbers for the old crop. And that really starts to make you wonder when we look ahead to the new crop at this point, are we going to see demand expectations grow a little bit, even though the crop could get bigger on the future reports?
So here we are at 1.8 billion bushels, or thereabouts, for the carryout for this year. That compares to what? About what we had last year, I think, at this time, if I remember correctly. And we began using sharply. You think? I doubt that you think that we can use that much because of the 2012 crop and the backlog that they needed. But where can we end up, do you suppose, Dale?
You know, that's something I really haven't given a lot of thought to at this particular juncture yet. But, you know, when you kind of wind in the stories we were getting here at the end of the week regarding China and the dryness there, and admittedly, because of the GMO issue, China's not necessarily going to be a customer of ours unless they feel that the situation really warrants it. And they can quickly change the MIR 162 thing at the drop of a hat. You know, going back to the Russians in the 1970s, early 80s, you learned, always expect the unexpected, you know, and having a changer wouldn't surprise me if it looks like the crop isn't going to measure up. And the other problem with China in the mix is just the level of government inventories. But, you know, I think we're probably going to stay under 2 billion. I think the corn yield number is still going to go up. I'm thinking in the end of around 173. So it's going to be hard to ratchet down from the 1.8, even if acres are trimmed a little.
Well, that's a big number. That's up, what, 5.5 bushel from where we are at 167.4. Anybody else that high? How about you, Wayne?
I'm more in the 170 camp, Todd. I think that there, because of the cool, wet weather that we had most of the summer, that there's going to be some fungus and other diseases out there that will hit us a little bit down and not get as much over that 170 mark.
And Chip?
Yeah, I agree with Wayne. 170, 171. However, I think the wild card is, you know, the USDA has several more cracks at it, and they could end up above that at some point. So we could trade a bigger crop size and then have them ratchet that back maybe for the final report. But I think 170, 171, you think about that, that's still an enormous crop and, you know, astronomical yields across the corn.
All right. So at the current usage, 170 would be that 2 billion bushel carryout. USDA at 167.4 says we'll be at 1.8 billion bushels. At 173, what do you think supply or consumption looks like, Dale, and what do you end up with a carryout?
Well, you know, again, I think we don't go over the 2 billion bushel number here at this point when you get out there in the end. Because the one thing you do find, when you have big supplies, we tend to use it. The other thing that tends to occur in here in the mix, it's this residual number in consumption that historically has had an awful lot of volatility in it. But I think at these prices, what we're seeing now, demand, I think, is going to start to get some levity now that we've put that first crop report behind us and the end users out there have a reasonably good idea what the playing field ahead is like. Ethanol, to me, is going to be good. I think the feed and residual is going to be good. And it wouldn't surprise me that the export market doesn't outperform, too.
All right. Set aside basis for the moment, because I know that it might do the job in dropping the marketplace, depending on how fast the crop comes in, because it may very well mature all, roughly speaking, at the same time. It entered dough stage and has stayed there and for a very long time, and the dent is behind. It entered stow early, but dent is behind, so maturity will come with the growing degree days, I think. If you just talk about the futures markets, have we gotten to the place where the lows might be in the areas that we've been in the last couple of weeks, do you think, Dale? Or was that low enough? I'm not asking whether we've made a harvest low exactly, but is that the range?
You want to know something?
Yeah.
There's a 40-week cycle that goes through the corn market. It's got a long history. We're towards the end of that window for that 40-week cycle to bottom. And look at the performance that we turned in this week. We went down, went to a new low. We ended up with a nice weekly reversal up after having a daily reversal up earlier in the week. To me, I kind of think, and we aren't going to have any big splashy move to the upside, but I have a suspicion we have put lows behind us or something very close to it. I don't see any real downside anymore.
You know, I have to say that my friends that are real chart watchers said, you know, I looked at the Deese corn chart and it looks a whole lot better than I think it should with what the fundamentals are. Being major fundamentalist here, I'm sitting here like, God, the worst should be yet to come. But if people, then those charts do seem to work a lot of times. If they're really watching those, Dale could be right.
And Chip, I'll let you put your two cents in too.
Well, in the short run, I agree. The market acts better than it probably should. But I think my fear is, anyway, that as you rally this market, you know, the funds never really got short corn. And any type of bounce, they're still long, as a matter of fact. So any type of bounce you do see, I think you're going to see the funds exit the remaining long position and want to get short this market. And farmers still have a huge amount of corn to price. So we still have a major ownership transition to get through. I think any rally you do see really doesn't bode very well for, you know, deep into the winter time frame. It could open the door up for a lower low at some point. So short run, yep, I think the market acts well and we could probably rally a little bit. Long term, I'm not convinced that those lows are in yet in corn.
All right, so let's take up the other shoe here, which is the basis locally. I suppose there will be places, and we've already seen this, even without a harvest in place out in the Dakotas where they can't move any kind of crop. The basis is unbelievably wide. How wide will basis in central Illinois, let's start there, at Indiana, how wide might it get, do you think, as we get into harvest? Is 35 cents enough? Is 50 cents enough? Is demand going to not allow that to happen? What do you think?
Well, I think that it's going to be an interesting situation, and it really gets back to that ownership. Commercials and elevators don't have a lot of ownership right now, and it may artificially keep us from that big washout that we normally see in a big crop or would normally expect. So I think this basis game is really interesting going forward. You know, it looks to me like some of these commercials are kind of sandbagging the deferred bids in order to try to entice the farmer to maybe get some sold here, or I guess keep these fall basis levels poor, but not so poor that doesn't entice, you know, the farmer to continue to sell and get some movement here. So I think the basis game really isn't as simple as it would appear it would be in a big crop year, and probably doesn't mean that we have to get as bad as what we'd expect in central Illinois, central Indiana, with a huge crop coming.
I think that the commercials are short of what they'd like to have bought. I think there's going to be some good early basis premiums for push so they can get the pipeline back to full. And I think that then after that, then it's going to go to how much storage does the farmer really have, and is the elevators, are they all going to get full, is to see what we do. Because basically along the way, we've got a lot more on-farm storage, but I think we're going to have a lot more than the farmers can hold this year.
Dale?
You know, Wayne said the magic thing. I think it's going to come down to a storage game, because realistically, when you step back and you look at the market at this point, it's something like what it was a year ago when things were at their bleakest in the post-harvest period. And what I'm addressing here is beans were still priced high in relationship to corn. And to me, if a farmer needs to move stuff for cash flow, I think he's going to price the beans, sell the beans, unless we fall apart ASAP into harvest, which is possible, and tend to hold on to the corn as much as possible. And as long as storage is available, I think that says that the basis levels themselves never really had that washout, like Chip implied earlier.
So I do want to ask that question of each of you, and I think you just whispered this to me. Did you say that's what Daryl says? Is that, yeah, so I listened back and cut it up for the Illini Farm Report, so this goes out to some of the rest of the stations, to the interview I did with Daryl on Tuesday morning that ran on the air Tuesday afternoon, where he simply says, and I don't think the FSA numbers will have changed his mind today, that he at this point wants to own corn and sell soybeans. And are you in that same boat?
I think it is, Todd. I think that there's going to be a real advantage to getting your beans sold early. There's going to be some good premiums to fill in. And we are so far out of the market for after when Brazil comes on about February time period that I think it's the basis appreciation just wouldn't be there. So I think corn is going to be a better chance to improve.
Chip Nellinger?
Yeah, I think that's probably a good spread. I think that honestly was a lot of the action you saw today or this week was unwinding of short corn, long bean spreads, and I think that can continue. As you look out there, not only for this 14 crop, but next year, the 15 crop, you know, that corn-bean ratio favors beans. So it could be in the acreage play as we get into winter and early spring next year. I don't think it's too soon to be thinking about, 15-type production out there, especially in the case of beans.
Dale, I think I did hear you say you were a seller of soybeans or producer should be. What were you doing with corn?
Right now, I'd prefer not to really market any corn unless I'd have to, and I'm targeting to move somewhere up into the 390s base D's and then make some sales, move some stuff if you think you're going to have to make some sales. But I'm not a long-term seller of corn up here.
Yeah, so I should correct myself, and what Daryl actually said is he would not move unpriced corn.
Right. I agree with him.
So that's a little different than owning corn, but right. If you have unpriced corn, you're not going to do anything with that. Okay, let's switch to soybeans. You mentioned soybean basis. What about it?
I think that we're going to see a very tight basis here to start harvest because the commercials have a lot of early sales on quick shipment stuff's there. We're going to have some carried over from old crop that we won't get shipped. And they've sold a lot for right up front. And we do know that the farmer has been a very light seller in most cases. Talking at some of the local meetings, we're hearing that one or two elevators have bought a decent amount of corn and beans for this fall, but most of them haven't. And I'll tell you what, they've got stuff sold, and the freight has got to be there, and they've got that booked, and they got to move it. So I think they're going to want to buy the beans early.
And so you think there will be a premium for beans?
Yes.
How much?
Well, I imagine, just looking at it, that instead of we could actually be an even basis or a little plus instead of the minus like 35 or so that a lot of them are running for the farmers.
Chip, is this what you're hearing or thinking?
I would agree with that. I think we got to be a little bit cautious, though, because it's basis and futures. So, there's two sides to that. And, we talked earlier about the bean market having a pretty poor performance this week and maybe opening the door up for lower lows here yet to come. So I think we've got to be cautious to think about both sides of that. Basis could be pretty good, but as you get deep into harvest, even if basis firms up, if we see prices sub $10, we're still going backwards if those beans aren't hedged or priced. So, there's two sides of the story, but I do agree that bean basis very good right now. We've got huge demand. China continues to buy and probably stays fairly firm, and especially for quick ship and early beans due to the slowness of the maturity with this cool summer we've had.
Dale, in fact, soybeans did not post the best week technically. They were, down 32 and three quarters in the November. They were finished at 10.52. They posted an outside down week.
Yeah, they did. Technically they still look weak to me. November beans is poised to fall to another new low again and probably initially go to 10 and a quarter. And I've got a long-term target that's still down as deep as 9.60. We'll have better ideas as the case builds. But from a timing perspective, it looks like beans, we have a low coming somewhere around the middle part of September. So to me, going forward, it still looks like bean futures are going to be weak, which fits into both what Chip and Wayne were talking about there in terms of basis levels. And the other thing we got to remember on basis levels is that not only are we going to have, the beginnings of a new crop export campaign, but we're going to have probably a fairly aggressive crush campaign because of these bean meal sales we have on the books too. So we're going to have a real competition going on between processor and exporter to get the beans out of the farmer's hands.
All right, so we've covered a lot of what's happening in the United States, a little bit of the outside world. One of the things that we heard about on Friday during the day was the Russian-Ukraine conflict. And it appears that Ukraine has fired on a Russian column that have been delivering humanitarian aid to rebels on the Ukrainian side of the border. And that push the market a bit higher. What do you think about this particular conflict?
It's dangerous. It's risky. The Ukrainian, Putin is not a man to be dealt with lightly, and doing that is one thing that is good. I think it's very good that the Ukraine is holding their ground and the rest of the world is hanging with them, and that might stop things from getting that way. We're going to think that they probably were more than humanitarian aid going in there. If they did fire them, they had good reason to, probably. But that's, we saw the wheat market stay very strong, because that could screw up the world wheat market quite a bit if we get a real battle going on there.
We have discussed this issue on Commodity Week before, came to the conclusion that if the sanctions stayed on, Putin didn't have really any choice other than to try to take advantage of the food supplies, the grains, the oil seeds that would be available in Ukraine. And that would eventually have an impact on the Black Sea ports, depending on what happens. And, of course, that could change the marketplace as well. Dale, how do you view this process?
It's one of those situations where you just look at it every day, every week. There isn't anything you can really look forward to at this point in time and predict how this situation's going to unfold. You just know that there probably is more risk the way the situation has evolved up until now to moving more into a conflict-type situation, which ultimately, at some point, do they decide to put a blockade on and prevent anything from coming out of Russia? Who knows? I mean, you just don't have any feel for where this thing's headed right now.
What's your best set of advice, Dale, for a producer at this time looking forward? And does it differ from one part of Illinois to the other, or from one part of the Midwest to the other?
A producer of what?
Corn and beans.
You know, and beans, I think I'm still in a camp where I'd be a willing seller of beans at this particular moment, preferably on a hedge to arrive as far as the new crop case is concerned. And, you know, the corn, I'm basically in a position to wanting to dribble out what I need, you know, to kind of prepare myself in terms of space for the looming corn and soybean harvest ahead.
And I better check in on what you're thinking about soft red winter wheat and whether producers should put it in the ground. And what do they do if they don't?
Next year's it's a hard one to always look at, but right now, to me, it looks like as we move through the winter, and this has to do with some long-term cycles in place, that we're going to see some higher wheat prices for whatever case. So I'm really not willing to sell any new crop wheat at this point. And for those producers in the southern part of the state, you know, a bean-wheat combination still beats corn.
Chip Nellinger, your thought process?
Well, I think it varies by operation, but I would say, starting with corn, we have to understand there's a lot of carry in this market. So there could be some upside, but we have to be very careful and be willing to lock in that carry in the market, because, you know, a big supply market, the function of that marketplace is to just work through the carry. If you don't lock it in on the bounces, by the time it gets there 2-3 months out, even going sideways, we've worked through the carry. So I think that's important. Beans, I agree with everyone where, you know, that was said earlier, plenty of downside risk, probably more downside risk in the bean market than there exists in corn and wheat right now. And from that wheat standpoint, I would agree with the comments from earlier that with the uncertainty in Russia and Ukraine, also the uncertainty of, you know, will we plant less wheat acres? Yes, there's a supply that's pretty ample in the world right now, but if we lose a bunch of acres, we could easily see that wheat market rally. So I guess I'd be willing to stay with my rotation if I'm a wheat producer and plan on planting.
That, of course, is Chip Nellinger, and wraps up this edition of Commodity Week.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
This is Illinois Public Media.